namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we're reading from Canto 10, Chapter 69. Narada visits Krishna's palaces, text number 28. Kutrachit dvija mukyebhya dadatam ga su alankritaha itihasa puranani shinvatam mangalani cha kutrachid dvija mukyebhyo dadatam gasvalankritaha itihasa puranani shrinvatam mangalani cha kutrachid dvija mukyebhyo dadantam gasvalankritaha itihasa puranani shrinvatam mangalani cha kutrachit dvija mukyebhyo dadatam gasvalankritaha itihasa puranani shrinvatam mangalani cha. Ladies? Word meaning? Kutrachit, somewhere. Dvija, two brahmanas. Mukyebhya, excellent. Dadatam, giving. Ga, cows. Su, well. Alankritaha, ornamented. Itihasa, epic histories. Puranani, and the Puranas. Shrinvatam, hearing. Mangalani, auspicious. Cha, and. Translation. Somewhere he, Krishna, was giving well-decorated cows to exalted Brahmanas, and elsewhere he was listening to the auspicious narration of epic histories and Puranas. Please repeat. Somewhere he was giving well-decorated cows to exalted brahmanas, and elsewhere he was listening to the auspicious narration of epic histories and Puranas. Purport by disciples of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti informs us that giving cows in charity occurs in the morning, while hearing the histories takes place in the afternoon. Om agena tu me andasha tanan anjana shalakaya chakshu umminitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri tetanimano bhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapanantikam jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhar shivasadi gaur bhaktivedanta hare krishna 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 hare 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 ram 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 hare hare. Can we move this now? Can we move the sign now? So, here we are continuing this section. Mostly very short purports, but very colorful one after another descriptions of Narada Muni visiting Krishna's different palaces and seeing how the Lord in each of the different palaces was engaged in different activities. So there's several different points that we can learn from this and contemplate. We'll discuss a few here this morning. First is that we notice, and Narada was particularly struck by how everywhere he went, the Lord was engaged in different activities, one place to the next, to the next, to the next, different activities with different devotees, as being described and elaborated in the purport. You know, here we're hearing that he was distributing cows to the well-decorated cows, to the exalted brahmanas, elsewhere listening to the auspicious narration of the epic histories and Puranas. Yesterday's verse, he was consulting with royal ministers. Earlier, he's riding on horses, elephants, and chariots, etc. So every place Narada kind of peeks in to see what's going on. Krishna's doing different things. So one point from this is this substantiates that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is God. And even when on earth, when he's displaying different human-like activities, human-like in the sense he's doing duties that kings and leaders of society are supposed to perform, even when he's doing those things, he still maintains his transcendental position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's acting as a powerful king, but he's not just a powerful king, he's God. And he's performing different important duties, but he's not just a historical or mythical figure doing those. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so the evidence for this is given throughout, especially the 10th canto. So we understand, yes, Krishna was acting in the role as a king. So sometimes people think, well, he's a king, I'm a king, he's just like me. Okay, but he had 16,108 palaces. So not an ordinary king. Or sometimes people say, well, he was a baby. How can he be God? Because he, you know, everybody in India particularly knows all the different leelas of Krishna when he was a baby, such a beautiful little baby. Well, he was a baby, but also as a baby, he killed so many demons. Not a lot of babies do that. They do a lot of strange things, but they don't kill demons. Yes, he was a young boy. Sometimes people hear, oh, Krishna was a young boy. Yes, he was a young boy. Part of his lila manifesting his youthful pastimes. But as a young boy, he lifted a mountain with his left hand, with his little pinky, and held it up for 7 days. So, okay, he's a boy, but... And sometimes, you know, people hear, they say, oh, Krishna... Sometimes they question, how can he be God? He danced with so many young girls. So I can also dance with young girls. There's so many people dance with young girls. Yes, but mystically each of those girls saw that only I am dancing with him by his mystic power, although he was dancing with so many. And the devas themselves were watching, glorifying, praising the transcendental dancing activities of the Lord and his topmost devotees. So that's one thing that we can understand, how by seeing Narada going from place to place to place, even he's amazed at everything Krishna's doing. Narada Muni, great preacher and self-realized soul, he's amazed at Krishna's qualities and his omnipotence, his unlimited potencies and energy. So one point we should take from this is to see, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another point that's elaborated in the purports and we can see in the text is that Krishna in his different activities, he's teaching. He's teaching what's proper behavior. And as described many times by the Acharyas, we should follow in Krishna's footsteps. We can't imitate, but we can follow in his footsteps. There are certain things that are meant particularly as examples for us. So there's other things that are purely his lila. But here we see in this particular verse, he's giving charity. He's specifically offering, giving well-decorated cows to exalt the brahmanas. So he's teaching, particularly the role of grihasthas, the importance of charity. So those of us that are living in the grihastha ashram, we should try to understand that our responsibility also, as exemplified by Krishna, is to give charity. And also charity according to the right time and the right place, not just whimsically giving charity, but trying to understand where can we give charity in such a way it's going to bring the most benefit, how it can actually uplift people as much as possible. So he's demonstrating that. He's serving the brahmanas. In this short verse, we learn that he's serving the brahmanas. He's protecting the cows indirectly by caring for them and by offering them to be protected by the brahmanas. He's hearing the shastra. It's interesting, even though he's God, he's sitting listening to the shastra. Later, there's a couple verses ahead where Narada Muni observes that it describes it something like Ram. We hear about Lord Ramachandra doing this, but Krishna also. Sometimes he would go out incognito, in disguise, and hear what's going on in the kingdom. And when Narada observes that, he starts laughing. Because he's just thinking, how amazing is Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows everything, but he's going out to find out what people are thinking and what they're saying. So it describes, he starts laughing about, you know, how wonderful it is. Krishna's God, you know, like you know everything, but you're going out playing and, you know, acting the part of a king. So it says Narada started laughing, but then he controlled his laughter because he remembered he is God. Let's not get carried away with laughing. So, it's this very interesting rasa is revealed to us as well. And of course, we know in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, he says, I'm engaged in all these different kind of duties, because if I don't do them, then people will follow my path. They'll point and say, oh, well, Krishna, as they already do, they point to some of his transcendental activities and sometimes use those as an excuse for their materialistic, perverted concept of those activities. But in a broader sense, if Krishna didn't act according to setting the proper behavior for a leader and protecting cows and giving cows in charity and taking care of the brahmanas, etc. If he didn't, he says, then people, they'll follow my path and this will lead to ruination. So it's another lesson for us that as devotees, as disciples and followers and worshippers and servants of Lord Krishna, we're also meant to try to carry out and execute his mission and execute his mood. So we also can learn from this that we should be very careful about the example that we offer. You know, as followers of Krishna and of our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada and our different initiating and instructing spiritual masters, we're also meant to teach. You know, that's a big emphasis here in the Chaupati Temple and the larger community. There's so many wonderful teaching and educational programs going on. I think it's wonderful. I was thinking that in the early days when we were brahmacharis, there was not so much emphasis on the opportunity to study. And it's unfortunate because it was an opportunity that in some ways was lost. So you're very, very fortunate here in the temple, brahmacharis especially, but grihasthas also, many different educational programs, so that we can learn and train ourselves in understanding the deeper truths and information that's given about Krishna and relationships with Krishna, what it means to practice bhakti yoga. And at the same time, of course, we want to try to teach others, as there's so many wonderful outreach programs that are here to educate others. But from this verse, we also understand from this series of verses to always remember that teaching isn't about words. That's not the most important thing. There's a wonderful quote that's given reference to the Christian Saint Francis, who most of us here have heard about, Saint Francis. And paraphrasing, he said something like this. He said to his disciples, he said, you should preach all day long. And when necessary, You can also say a few words. So you should preach all day long, and when necessary, also say a few words. So what did he mean by that? Obviously that our behavior is actually more important than what we speak. And we can see that today. There's so many leaders in the world that say so many things, but then their personal behavior is not up to the mark. And sometimes they'll say, sometimes even a so-called teacher will say, "Do what I say, not what I do." But everybody knows that has the opposite effect, because if you're saying this but doing this, obviously that's what you personally give value to. So if I'm learning from you, anyone who has a little intelligence, they say, "I can tell this is actually what you think is important because that's what you're doing." So the teacher says you should lead a clean lifestyle, but then they're doing nonsense. Well, the student's naturally going to think, well, you're just saying that because you have to. They pay you to say that. But what you really want to do is this. So what I learned from you is that's the better thing. So in this way, the whole thing really is ruined. So as devotees, it's important that we also learn from this the importance of setting a good example. Of course, we're conditioned souls. We make mistakes. We shouldn't put so much pressure on ourselves. Sometimes this happens in our communities and in our hearts. We put so much pressure on ourselves. Sometimes we become discouraged because, you know, we're reading about pure devotional service. We're reading about Narada Muni. And we're reading about Srila Prabhupada, and we're hearing Prabhupada, and we're seeing Prabhupada's example, and we're looking at the real-life examples of some of Prabhupada's great followers. And again, following their footsteps, but sometimes we fall short, and that's okay. Prabhupada said repeatedly that if you continue to endeavor, Krishna will help you. And whatever shortcomings are there, they'll go away gradually if we remain sincere and continue to serve nicely. So both these things are there. We have to balance. We shouldn't be discouraged at whatever shortcomings or mistakes we make, but we should learn from those. Sometimes they say the two most harmful words in the English language are "what if." If we meditate, we let our minds dwell on "what if." You know, what if I'd said this instead of that? What if I'd studied this instead of that? What if I'd gone here instead of there? What if I'd invested my money here instead of there? That's a very popular one these days. You know, people are so materialistic. Oh, what if I'd only put money there and then the stocks went up? Today I'd be a billionaire. Oh, what if, what if, what if, etc. So those aren't helpful. That's not a helpful mentality. Lamenting about things in the past or whatever. Some regret sometimes is helpful for us, that we acknowledge our shortcomings. But the two, from this line of thought, the best words in English, I don't know what they would be in Hindi, but in English, next time. So instead of saying, "Oh, what if I'd done this, this, this?" No. Okay. I wish I'd done better. I wish I hadn't made the mistake. I wish I hadn't done such a foolish thing, and I wish I'd known more. But next time, when it comes up again, I'm not going to do that again. When it comes up again, I'm going to think more carefully. When it comes up again, I'm going to consider it and look for other options. So it's a much more positive way of looking at things. So we can learn from our mistakes. This whole world's designed like that. We've had possibly 8,400,000 different species of mistakes that we went to. I was at the Govardhan Eco Village for just a couple days since I was here. And one morning I was chanting my japa on the edge of the temple, and it's an open space, and there's a light giving down below. And as always happens, so many insects are flying around. I was kind of watching these insects go around, and when the light reflects, you know, they become kind of like a sparkler or a light themselves for a few minutes. So I was just thinking about these bugs flying at that light and how foolish it is, you know, and how symbolic it is, the material energy. There's this light that's attractive, and the heat apparently to them is attractive. So they're just flying around to one extent and the other, thinking life's good. And if I just stay close to this light, everything's kind of cozy. course, if they get too close, zap. In fact, they even make lights these days. I don't know if they have these in India. India is generally more sattvic. Some countries where there's a lot of bugs, they put a light outside that it attracts the bugs, but it's specifically designed to kill them. So they fly into the light. Bzz, so there's bzz, bzz, all night long. Bzz, 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 bzz. But even with the regular light, and I was watching some of these bugs, and some of them they kind of come up really close, and then they fall. So I'm thinking, oh, they got too close. They burnt their wing. They thought they were going to enjoy, but they lost their life. And other ones, they seem more expert. They're kind of flying around in all these different exotic patterns. And I was thinking, here's a bug that's really proud of his flying abilities. He's just thinking, you know, to whatever degree they think, there's some consciousness there. Oh, this is fun. Look at me. And they're swirling. I try to follow some of their patterns. And they swirl around and they go down and then up. I said, this is like a Ferris wheel or an amusement park. You go up and you go down and this and that. But at the end of the ride, everybody knows, you know, any kid that's ever been to amusement park, you get off that ride and go, okay, what's next? What's next? That was okay. It was fun, but what's next? Ultimately, it wasn't enough. What's next? So these bugs, they're so absorbed in their little light and their heat. So in the same way in human life, it's the same thing. We look at the insects and say how foolish it is. You know, but then we're working so hard just to, most people just to, you know, buy a motorcycle, to have a house in this block instead of that block, etc. It's the same thing, really. You know, from the viewpoint of a pure devotee, even the demigods, they look at us. We think, oh, the things I'm pursuing are so important. I remember I heard an election time. Prabhupada talked about he was in Howrah Station, and he was explaining how the living entity becomes so attached to material things and how foolish it is. And he said he saw a man carrying a bag or probably a cloth wrapped around, and Prabhupada used the word half burnt wood. So wood's not so important, but if you're a poor man, maybe wood has some importance. Of course, if you're in the lumber business, it can have a lot of value, but generally, most people when they travel, there's a suitcase, there's some clothes, there's maybe some jewelry, some money, whatever. This man only wood, but not just wood, half burnt wood. So in one sense, it's a sad thing that someone is so poor in this world that this is what their possessions are. But Prabhupada was also making the philosophical point, even he was attached to these possessions. So just to keep this perspective again, that people in this age, we're all bewildered by so many things, and people need guidance, and they need options, and they need alternatives. And as devotees, it's especially important because people generally, they don't have so much faith in Scripture. A lot of times people, what little Scripture people know, they learn it to see what's wrong. Or they learn a little of this Scripture to find something contradictory in another Scripture. So you reference one thing, they tell you something they think contradicts it. Therefore, I can just be like an insect and chase the heat and the light because there's some contradiction there. So they don't have so much faith in Scripture. Generally, people, they think they're philosophical. Well, generally, they're not very philosophically inclined. And people are very cynical. Generally, people are very, very cynical. Why? Because they've been cheated so many times. It's very hard to have faith when you've been cheated so many times. So many claims are given. I remember as a child watching on television, there was some soap, you know, hand soap. And they talked about how this soap is so good because it never leaves a film. And part of the ad was they showed a sink and hands making a lather. And they took a pair of glasses and they dipped them in the sink and they pulled it out and no lather. It just rinsed right off. And I wore glasses pretty young. And I can't remember if I tried it or not, but I remember I tried the soap. And it was the most film-leaving soap I'd ever tried. And I was, you know, even as a child, I was thinking, they're lying. And I was thinking, because it leaves such a film, they have to tell everybody, there's no film, as their selling point. Just like, I don't know if they use this expression here, but in my country they have something called happy hour. They have happy hour here? Happy hour is like at the bars or the pubs or the taverns. Right after work, they sell the liquor cheap because they want to capture people that should go home to their husbands or their wives. They want them to stop at the bar and, you know, spend a few hundred rupees before they go. So they have happy hour, cheap liquor. But it's not a happy hour, it's a sad hour. You go to some dark place, you spend all your money, you kill a few more brain cells, they talk to the bartender, you know. Bartenders are famous, they're like psychiatrists in modern times. People come in and tell them, oh, my family's having trouble, my kids are having trouble, my boss is having trouble, my health's having trouble. And the bartender, because he's so spiritually qualified, he says, no problem, just have another drink. And they call that happy hour. So it's a strange society we live in. Therefore, as devotees, following in Krishna's footsteps, we should be very, very careful. As they say, actions speak louder than words. So this is another lesson here, that it's not so much what we say, but it's what we do. And people are watching. They watch us. And they get faith or they lose faith based on that. So, for instance, we go out on book distribution or Harinam. It's not just that when we start chanting, then they listen. But they look to see how do they interact with each other as they're getting off the bus. You know, are they helping each other carry the box of books? Are they polite to the little old lady that was in line in front of them? Etc. Maybe these are things we don't think about so much because we're thinking about we have to preach. You know, we're rough with each other in our effort to get out and do whatever. But people are watching to say, well, what have you learned from your books? What have you learned from your preaching? Do I want to be like you? That's the big question in people's mind. I know I knew one woman, a business associate, somebody met for years ago, and she told us her father joined a particular religious organization just because they were such nice people. He wanted his children to grow up and be like these people, to be respectful, to be polite. Because these are the basic qualities of a God-conscious person. He didn't understand the philosophy so much. Maybe he did later, but that's what really attracted him. So it's a fact. People are like that. And we can see many times devotees that come to Krishna consciousness, they're not even so sure what the philosophy is, but they like the people. And of course the food. You know, prasadam is so powerful. But again, another example of the importance for us to act very properly. So a third point here, to draw out of this verse, is the importance of hearing the descriptions about the Lord, because that's what we're doing. We're hearing Narada's exchanges with Krishna, his observations with Krishna. Very important verse in the seventh verse of the 10th chapter. Read a little bit of the text and then the purport. Etam vibhutam yogam cha mama yo viti tattvataha so vikalpena yogena yujate natra samshayaha. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mind, just like 16,000 palaces, different things at every time, that's a mystic power. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mind engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, the highest summit of spiritual perfection is knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's interesting. So it implies there's other spiritual perfections. Not that it's either you're Krishna conscious or nothing. There's other levels of spiritual attainment. But the highest level is understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless one is firmly convinced of the different opulences of the Supreme Lord, he cannot engage in devotional service. Generally, people know that God is great, but they do not know in detail how God is great. Here are the details. If one knows factually how God is great, then naturally he becomes a surrendered soul and engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord. When one factually knows the opulence of the Supreme, there is no alternative but to surrender to him. This factual knowledge can be known from the descriptions in Srimad Bhagavatam that we're reading now, and Bhagavad Gita and similar literatures. These, and then skipping one paragraph, When one becomes firmly convinced of the opulences of the Lord, he accepts Krishna with great faith and without any doubt and engages in devotional service. All this particular knowledge is required in order to increase one's interest in the devotional service of the Lord. One should not neglect to understand fully how great Krishna is, for by knowing the greatness of Krishna, one will be able to be fixed in sincere devotional service. So sometimes we don't feel particularly sincere, or we may not feel we're as fixed as we want to be, and of course we can always be more fixed at the Lord's lotus feet. But here Krishna's explaining, Prabhupada's expanding, the way to achieve that is to become knowledgeable of Krishna and of his pastimes and his opulences. So another reason, another importance for this section where it's explaining about Krishna's particular amazing activities. And when we understand these things, then we can surrender. Then we'll make solid advancement in Krishna consciousness. And of course, related to that is that not only we should understand these things ourselves, but we should try as best possible to share them with others. So like I was driving around from here to Wada and then back the last few days, and it's such a big city. It's a huge city. And so many places, so many huge new houses going up, and all houses, you know, apartments, these big, huge complexes. And, of course, in one sense, these are good things. It's, you know, people in the economic development. Certainly, it's to the advantage of India and other countries to, you know, provide for people, to make sure people's needs are cared for. You know, how well those are distributed in various countries, that's a different issue. But at least the general idea, we're not opposed to economic development. But the problem is when that is done at the exploitation of the earth, or at the exploitation of people, or at the sacrifice of people's spiritual life, that's when it's a problem. That's where as devotees we try to do both. You know, we have so many brahmacharis that are renounce the world one degree or the other, live separate from the world. But then we also have grihasthas. The vast number of devotees in our movement are grihasthas who are engaged in the world, who should be engaged in the world, and who should engage in the world in such a way as to help people bring a little sanity into the choices they're making. There's ways to make profit without exploiting the planet. There's ways to make profit without exploiting workers. There are ways to make profit without exploiting the city. These are the kind of things devotee businessmen and businesswomen should be thinking about. So I was noticing that people are generally, you know, I was thinking here is such a beautiful temple and there's so many devotees and going out preaching. And then you drive across Mumbai and I was thinking, my gosh, we have so much work to do. There's a lot of people out there. And there's a lot of people that are very distracted. I was speaking with a couple of the devotees I was driving with and asking, you know, what's the mentality now in India? And he was telling me that, you know, people, they want to be a little spiritual, but, you know, they want to be spiritual to get blessings to pursue the material opulences. You know, we want to get blessings from Krishna that we can live. I mean, one of the things, grihasthas particularly sometimes need to ask, blessings from Krishna for some material facilities to enhance their service, not to distract them from service. So materialistic mentalities, give me more and more and more, I'll come back and give you a percentage later. Whereas the devotional mentality is, I have these skills, I have these abilities, I have these resources, let me learn how to develop them so that I can serve you and help to uplift society. Very different mentality. But I was noticing how people are so distracted. And of course, I live in America, they're so distracted. But why? Part of it related to this, because they're constantly hearing that material things can satisfy you. They're bombarded with messages in the newspapers, in the television, on the billboards. Now everybody's into social media. You can't just click on the social media, get bombarded with more advertisements. You know, if you want to have a contact with your friend, you got to learn about what kind of, you know, new blue jeans you should buy. And things like that. You know, people are bombarded. And this is part of the disease of the modern society. So we have to balance that by giving them alternative information. Krishna came to balance the propaganda by showing people what the spiritual world is like, by showing people how they can reawaken their relationship with Him. So that's our mission too. We have to counter the propaganda. Just like I was noticing so many billboards, happy father, happy mother, happy child, buy this insurance and feel safe. There's a need if you're a grihastha for insurance. You should have some insurance to care for your children and things if something happens, or I don't know how many kinds of insurance they have here. In America, you have to have car insurance, house insurance, flood insurance, earthquake insurance, life insurance, health insurance. That's just a few. Class isn't long enough. You need so much insurance. But if one starts thinking, this is a replacement for God, or now I'm safe, that was like Hiranyakashipu. He was like the original insurance salesman. You know? Let me arrange that, you know, I'm insured against death inside, outside, on the, you know, in the day, in the night. No human can kill me. No animal can kill me. No deva can kill me. Okay, I'm all right. I got it all covered. But it's an illusion, because ultimately Krishna's in control. I was thinking about when Prabhupada first came to America, at least once, maybe more times, he commented on, there's a brand of cigarettes, it was very popular in those days, called Cool. And they always would advertise, they show pictures of people like on a ski slope or something, you know, in the snow and smoking Cool. How cool you'd be. And Prabhupada would say, you know, how absurd this is. They're breathing fire, but they tell them it's cool. So how bewildered people are. I traveled through the Middle East recently, and in one airport, it was either Dubai or Qatar or one of those places, and they had a liquor store. They had a big sign, the world's most expensive bottle of liquor. Like, come in here, you can be one of the few. And I took a picture of it, I have to go back and check. But it was something like $150,000 for one bottle of liquor. Something around like $100,000. But it's okay, they had some cheaper ones too. $25,000. One bottle. I was thinking, you know, how amazing this is. And people, there wasn't a lot of people buying it, but there must be somebody, they wouldn't have the sign there. And when you think about it, what's really crazy is you'd never open that bottle. What if you open it, it's gone sour, whatever it is. Who are you going to tell? So you never open it. It just sits there. So you spend all this money so it can sit there. People do such crazy things. I was noticing here, drive around town. We observe these things. We can learn Krishna, little Krishna from this. When I was in Italy years ago, they had an ice cream bar called Magnum. So I guess now it's here, right? I don't think it started here. It started in Europe, I think. So I was noticing, I don't know all the people here. I don't know anything about Indian movies, but obviously famous Indian model, movie star, who's advertising for these chocolate bars. Not a very sophisticated thing. Ice cream bars, what children eat, sometimes people, adults also eat, you know. So they get the most sophisticated movie star. Stunning professional photo. If you haven't seen it, brahmacharis don't look. But like this beautiful photograph of this very pretty lady eating an ice cream bar. And it just says the name of the ice cream bar. First time I saw it, I thought, what are they spending so much money with a movie star and an ice cream bar? It doesn't seem to work. But then I'm driving across town, I saw it again and again and again. And then, and this is expensive. Those billboards cost a lot of money for a company to pay for. So then we're coming on one road, and I saw the same billboard. I thought, geez, there it is again. And they had it about 8 times in a row, huge, you know, like half the size of this wall. And then again, together, again and again and again and again. And I was watching. First one I thought, because this is how it works with people's minds, I thought, there she is again. Then I thought, there's that ice cream bar again. It's like one, like half of a, you know, a half a kilometer long almost, the same billboard. And the third time I'm thinking, must be good ice cream. And then I was thinking, is everybody starting to buy that ice cream? And then I thought, well, she's pretty famous. She likes that ice cream. And then, well, maybe all the best people are eating that ice cream. And then, well, I want to be one of the, you know, as each billboard goes by, the mind is further pulled into this whole kind of, you know, I was watching myself. I wasn't really thinking those things, but watching how my mind would think. You know, and after billboard number 12, you're thinking, I got to buy some of that ice cream. And I'm going to show it off to all my friends because I'm as sophisticated as she is, etc. It's just propaganda. But why do they spend so much money on it? They're not stupid. Why 12 billboards in a row? Because we know they've done some studies. You know, if you do 6, it only has this effect. If you do 8, it has that effect. If you do 12, we can guarantee you're going to increase the sale of your product by 0.72% within 3.5 months, increasing your profit, blah, blah, blah. Basically, people's minds are affected by what they're exposed to. So as devotees, of course, we have to be careful. Luckily, it's only an ice cream ad, but there's other ads out there. We have to be careful what we're exposed to. And more importantly, have to recommit to our commitment to the counter-propaganda. We have to give people an alternative. At the end of this verse, and we'll close with this, at the end of this chapter, near the end of this chapter, in purport to text 39, I'll just read this. It's such a wonderful purport, it won't steal the thunder. Can be looked at again later. But Prabhupada says, this is where Narada says, "O Lord, please give me your leave. I will wander about the worlds which are flooded with your fame, singing loudly about your pastimes." Purport, Prabhupada's not saying, disciples are saying. Even Narada Muni was bewildered to see Lord Krishna's amazing pastimes as a human being. Therefore, with the words Anujanihi, Mam Deha, Deva, he requests permission to return to his normal service of traveling and preaching. Inspired by what he has seen, he wants to preach widely the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. So in the same way, we should, as we learn and hear these pastimes of Krishna, we should be inspired to want to go out and share books about Krishna, to go in Harinam and share that the Lord's holy name, to share prasadam, to build, as you have here, beautiful, attractive temples, to teach so many different educational courses and provide festivals, and to be friendly and inviting to people so that they can also come and take advantage of the fact that the Lord is such an amazing personality. He has all these wonderful things that He's doing, enjoying in amazing transcendental ways, unlimited ways, and yet He also comes here in the middle of Mumbai on a crowded street to give us a chance to serve Him. And not only that, but He comes in the subways and the streets and everywhere else we go to chant and to distribute books, because that's also where acting as His instruments, as His hands and His legs and His mouth. It's our duty as trying to be Brahmins and trying to be servants to act as His mouth and preach in His glories. So just a few thoughts on this wonderful verse. And as Prabhupada said, we should all be grateful to Narada Muni, who's kindly appeared in the pages of the Bhagavatam to help us understand His relationship with Krishna. So thank you very much. I'll stop there. Maybe there's a question or comment. Nivina Nirda Prabhu.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Anuttama Prabhu. You were speaking that the words next time are very good. Could you elaborate a little bit about the balance between patience, Daryat, and to be a next lifetime Baba? Ah. Because partially avai things don't work in this world is because some people know that they're eternal and they say, well, I'll do it next time. Like you may go to a meeting, to a place, and they'll say, yeah, we'll deal with it next time, right? You know? Like, it's nice you came now, but we're going to do the job the next time when you come again.
Yeah. Good point.
So how to balance these as a devotee? Because some things take more time, but some things should be dealt with right now, that sense of urgency that Prabhupada had, like the house is on fire. But between the house is on fire and education and building a society, there has to be that balance.
Next time doesn't mean next lifetime. Next time means rather than wasting time lamenting about the mistakes I made. Oh, I should have done this, I should have done that, woe is me, what's my hope, I'm useless, I'm fallen, to think, no, let me assess what I did right, what I did wrong, what worked in a particular situation. And the very next opportunity I have, I'm going to apply what I learned. So next time means like a moment from now, 2 minutes from now. It doesn't mean next life. That would be a real misunderstanding of that idea. And to the broader point that you're speaking of, I think the question is that We definitely should have a sense of urgency about what we're doing. You know, Prabhupada talked like that when he started preaching in the West and then came back to India. He said, I'm an old man. Who knows how much time I have left? And we can see he really pushed himself. I mean, physically. I mean, the amount of time that Prabhupada put into his service throughout the day and how he minimized his sleeping. And, you know, the young 20-year-old men couldn't keep up with him, his intensity. And at the same time, he went to Vrindavan for how many years to prepare himself. So the balance is important. How to balance, I think part of it comes from understanding both sides. It's hard to find a balance if you only see one side. So to understand the benefits of pushing ourselves and doing more and not waiting, and also to see the disadvantages. We push ourselves too much physically, we get sick. We push ourselves too much psychologically, we can get discouraged. You know, we should be encouraged, not discouraged. And the same way, seeing the disadvantages, you know, I say if somebody says, I'll do it later, well, who knows how much longer later do we have? Recently, you may remember, there was, just within the last couple of months, there was a man who was the head of one of the largest oil companies in the world. I don't know, it was BP, I forget. And he was in Russia doing some business. And he was in his private plane, and they were about to take off. And there was an early snowstorm. So they had a snowplow out parked someplace or moving someplace and didn't have any lights. And the plane ran right into the snowplow, burst into flames, and poof. One minute he wasn't an old guy. I mean, he's in 50s or something. One minute he's one of the richest men in the world, you know, meeting with Putin and arranging deals to harvest more oil in Russia and Siberia, whatever. Next minute he's dead. So devotees too, we don't know how much time we have. We really don't. You know, time is the one thing that, as we know, you can't buy it back for a moment. You can't buy a moment back for an unlimited amount of gold. So we should be have a sense of urgency to use every moment we have. And at the same time, be aware of our own psychology, physical needs, emotional needs, ashram needs, hearing and chanting needs, etc., eating needs. So that we maintain our peak strength so that we can maximize what we do. Now, I remember thinking sometimes, like the analogy, like if you're in a boat race, somehow that image came to me years ago. If you're in a boat race, you know, if a boat goes fast, the front end lifts up and the bottom where that motor is goes down, at least a smaller boat. So if you're in a boat race, and if you enter some shallow area of water, you may be thinking, okay, put it full speed. The only way to win the race is full speed. But when you get to the shallow water, full speed means your engine's going to hit the bottom of the lake and ruin your boat. So full speed when the lake is shallow means slow down a little bit, dangerous waters. Or the same way, if there's a curve in any kind of a race, bicycle race, any kind of race, even running, if you get to a sharp curve, if you think, let me go full speed, you're going to crash. Or you're going to go straight. You're supposed to go this way and you go that way. So full speed in the full meaning of the word means slow down. So in a similar way, different stage. So if we're analyzing, Krishna, I want to go full speed, but give me the intelligence to know how to best do that at this particular stage of my life or in this particular situation. Like full speed book distribution, full speed. Okay, somebody offers you 100 rupees and maybe we, you know, full speed, well, he's got 50 of those, so give me them all and maybe we push him. You know, that would be going too fast for that person at that time. So Krishna gives us intelligence like that. Is that okay? Okay. So time to stop, huh? 9:15? Yeah? Okay. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanandi.